Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Talking Disney Podcast. We are here to cover another Disney classic, and we are here to talk about 101 Dalmatians. So much fun. I love this film, and I'm film critic Rachel Wagner, and I am here with my friend Stanford.
Hey, how's it going?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Hey, all is well. Thank you.
Hanging in there.
I'm excited to talk about this movie. I love this movie, too.
You ready to go out to a Dalmatian plantation?
Oh, my stars. Yes. Or even, I mean, I was just thinking, I wish I could just go to London.
Yeah. I'm really thrilled to be talking about 101 Dalmatians. I'll just spoil it now. It's number 6 in my rankings.
Nice
of Disney films. It's one of my favorites.
It's number 8 of mine. I love it. Yeah. It's my top 10. I absolutely love this movie.
So this is going to be a gush session.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yes. And so it's an interesting film to talk about too, just on a kind of the history of Disney perspective as well. It's at an interesting time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also, I thought maybe just off the top, we'd talk about, it's so underrepresented in the parks. It's so weird to me. Like, I feel like there's these movies that are so beloved, and there's just nothing from them in the parks. And it's especially surprising when you have one that involves crazy driving. Like, couldn't you have, like, such a good 101 Dalmatians ride?
I think you can have a really fun 101 Dalmatians ride. Absolutely. Yeah. And with Cruella de Vil involved somehow riding behind her, the wheel of her.
That would be such a fun dark ride.
It would be a cool dark ride for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, but there's nothing. I can't think of a single thing in any of the parks. Aside from having Cruella around occasionally,
mm-hmm.
that is 101 Dalmatians related.
Yeah, it's true. And it's a shame. I mean, clearly I think they sell a lot of 101 Dalmatians. Well, it seems like there's always some kind of 101 Dalmatians product,
mm-hmm.
you know, you can buy. But I'm with you. It would make a terrific dark ride. It's such an appealing... It's the movie and the aesthetic and everything is just so appealing. You know, I'm with you. Yeah. I'm with you.
Mm-hmm. You could even make it part of the, I guess they're doing Mary Poppins now, but you could even make it part of the Great Britain
pavilion,
mm-hmm. UK. I don't know. It's an interesting thing. I feel like most of the movies from the 60s and 70s, that Disney kind of shy away from them as far as legacy, which is interesting. You see a lot of the movies from the, obviously from the 40s and 50s.
Right.
The early 40s.
Mm-hmm.
And then the 50s, Cinderella, all the way to Sleeping Beauty. There's a lot. Alice in Wonderland.
Right.
Two rides. Which I guess makes sense. Alice in Wonderland being, I guess the 50s makes sense when that's when Disneyland was built. So it
right.
kind of makes sense. But I don't know. It's interesting to me that that certain such popular IPs aren't monopolized more by the company. I always kind of wonder why, but I love 101 Dalmatians. Weren't they going to make a show on Disney Plus? Did they announce something like that?
Well, it seemed to me that there was something announced that was right. That was 101 Dalmatians related. And I wonder if that's still
in production.
Yeah. Cause I was thinking about it the other day because did you know how they also announced that, that show Monsters at Work?
Mm-hmm.
And we had then it's the crickets on that one. And so maybe they're still working on it or it's been in development purgatory or something, or there's just been problems with it and they're just going to not make it anymore. You know, I mean, I don't know, but I should look into that and see.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. If we can dig up
any information, about that, because there have been some other animated series, right, around 101 Dalmatians. It seems like most recently, and I think it might even be on Disney Plus.
Uh-huh.
Something called like Dalmatian Street or 101 Dalmatian Street or something, which, again, you know, animated and just Dalmatians. I don't know what characters are in it or what, but but it seems to me that there are a couple of things. Just because I noticed them when I pulled up the search, you know, to
101 Dalmatians. 101 Dalmatian Street. This is the second TV series with a plot in the 21st century with a new art style and concept loosely based on the material. It centers on Dylan, a descendant of Pongo and Purdy, caring for 97 younger siblings with the help of his stepsister Dolly. So I don't know when that doesn't say when it's coming out or anything, but
okay.
Yeah, they need to work on that because now just since seeing what they have coming up here with this HBO Max, and it says here, I guess it was on Disney Plus UK, and it says December's release as a web television series on Disney Plus in the US and Canada on February 28th, 2020. So maybe it's good. Okay. Who knows? Who knows?
Who knows? And then also I was reminded too of the, the live action films, both 101 Dalmatians and 102 Dalmatians with Glenn Close as Bella DeVille. Those came out in the 90s, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. And I'm one of the only human beings that actually prefers 102 Dalmatians over 101 Dalmatians because it's just its own thing. So I'm not looking back at it. Oh, because I don't really like that the live action one made the puppies not talk.
Yeah.
And I feel like it was in that 90s thing where every children's film had to be Home Alone. And, with the pratfalls and the, things and the violence. They're fine. But I don't know. I just feel like 102 is really weird. And it's just like this strange movie with Cruella. And it's just kind of its own thing. I enjoy it more. And they just kind of let Glenn Close go bonkers. Mm-hmm. But those are certainly not the worst live action.
Right. And they happen under, the Eisner regime too. I mean, they happened a long time ago. I also then too was thinking about they're doing a movie Cruella, which is this latest
that I'm dreading remake
with Emma Stone as Cruella de Vil, which seemed like kind of interesting casting.
Yeah.
To me. And I don't know. I'm not looking forward to that one either. But I just know they have it next year, isn't it? I mean, who knows?
The whole idea, though, of a backstory of Cruella just seems like such a terrible idea. Why do I want to know what her and Anita were doing in university?
We don't.
Like what?
These backstory movies make me so frustrated.
Like, it's okay to just have evil people. Why do we have to know their tragic backstory?
It's like the Grinch, like, oh, he was just this misunderstood, and but I was like, no, he's the Grinch.
Exactly. But anyway,
I'm glad we can at least enjoy Cruella de Vil in this movie as Cruella de Vil,
And I certainly do enjoy her here. And it starts out with I love the intro credits with the spots.
Oh, I do too. Aren't they great?
Yeah. And the jazz music that they get. I think it's so fun and so immediately fun. Different than anything.
Yeah, instantly from the first frame. Yeah. I agree. I love them.
Yeah.
And really, and really kind of 1960s, it almost looks like, it's almost Disney's take on a Saul Bass, kind of intro. I think it's super cool.
And this was released in 1961. And it was a time when things were hard as far as finances for the studio. They'd had a lot of people probably don't realize that Sleeping Beauty was one of the biggest flops in the history of Hollywood. It took them over 10 years to make, and it's
super expensive,
super expensive. And it did not do well enough that they needed it to do. And so they were, you know, bouncing back off that and needed to be able to make, going from the artistry of Sleeping Beauty, where literally every frame was a work of art with multiple layers of painting and artistry and everything, to something that they could produce quickly that would be a hit. And this is the first film that they used what's called the Xerox method. To make the cells, drying the cells way faster and way cheaper. And do you have an idea, kind of explain kind of how that whole process works? Absolutely.
So the way I understand it, the Disney legend of Iwerks was in on some of this. And they were just trying to do something that, as you mentioned, was going to be fast and inexpensive and innovative. And so they were using, Xerox technology, copying technology. So the process used to be where the animators would do all of their rough yet finished animation, you know, that would be sent over to the ink and paint department. And then the inkers would, you know, paint the outlines, and then the painters would fill in with color, right? Mm-hmm. So with this Xerox process, they actually were just copying the animators' drawings, and it would copy with a black line on the cell.
Yeah.
It would save that step, but also it provided a different artistic style. And what I had read too, and I'd be interested to hear, you know, what you've heard or read and studied too, Rachel, but Walt Disney was really not a fan of the look of this film. It was a huge hit, and you know, what can you do, right? I think they were grateful to have a hit. But what I had read though, that the animators were thrilled with it, because often I think they felt that some of their more nuanced work got almost kind of stripped a little bit as they were getting inked, you know, as that inking process was happening. Whereas in this one, they could actually see their drawings how they did them on the big screen. I read some accounts, particularly, I think the quote I read was from Mark Davis, you know, the great animator and artist, Mark Davis, saying what a thrill it was to actually see his work on the big screen as he did it, you know, represented in a way that was really true to his work. So, and then also what I had read too, because so many dogs are in this movie, I mean, that's a lot to draw. So they animated like three, like with the puppies, what I read, they did the animation on three, and then they just could copy them and then modify the spots and however. So it just gives the impression that they're doing so many. So, still, even though they were simplifying the process, they still added a real level of artistry to it, you know, because they chose to do something that also was kind of hard, you know, with Dalmatians, with having to draw all those spots and everything, and how they kind of vary the way the ears, you know, the color of the ears and the pattern and stuff. It's fun, I think. To see it in, I was just reminded of that again, watching it again, just how appealing it is and how impressive it looks. And again, what cool tricks they were using to make it.
Yeah. I mean, and how brilliant, if you're going to test out the Xerox method, how brilliant to pick a film that's about black and white spotted dogs.
I know, right?
Like, perfect. Brilliant. Perfect. Yeah, brilliant. Yeah. But they were able to cut out basically a third of the whole process. So of course that's going to make it way faster and way cheaper. Mm-hmm. That they saved about, they made the film for about half of what it would have cost if they had to animate all the dogs and Spots. So that's pretty amazing.
I think it's amazing too, Rachel. And I really think it's interesting too how the process almost bleeds over into the backgrounds that they chose to use with it too, because it's the same thing. They've got a really strong line, you know, as far as just the art style, and very, very stylistic. And again, very kind of the time period too. But, and then the colors that they chose to use, rather than like do the background painting so detailed, like has really been a hallmark, or what was a hallmark up to that point of Disney animation. They went with a much simpler color design. And often too, and I was noticing it again this with this rewatch, when a scene gets dramatic, I mean, all the colors just kind of go to gray.
Yeah.
And not that they were that vivid.
Or red.
Red, like in the DeVille mansion and stuff. Anyway, it's really cool. And I remember as a kid thinking, wow, I don't think my little eyes could quite understand it, or my little brain. But I mean, I enjoyed the movie a lot. Mm-hmm. But as an adult now, I just absolutely love it. You know, as far as just what it, because the art style is so different, but really, really well executed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you're right about Walt. He did not like it. And he felt like it took away from the fantasy element of animation that he, you know, he loved so much. And the art director, Ken Anderson, this was kind of his baby in a lot of ways. And Walt was pretty cruel.
His heart on him.
To him, and said that, he said, we're never going to do one of those things ever again in the studio, and that Ken's never going to be an art director again. And then it says here, it says, Ken Anderson took this to heart, but Walt eventually forgave him on his final trip to the studio in late 1966. And it says that he looked very sick. I said, gee, it's great to see you, Walt. And he said, you know, that thing you did on Dalmatians. And then he didn't say anything else, but he just gave me this look, and I knew that all was forgiven. And in his opinion, maybe what I did on Dalmatians wasn't so bad. That was the last time I ever saw him. Then a few weeks later, I learned he was gone.
That he died. So, yeah.
That's pretty cute.
Something? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, he didn't like it. But you know, it's interesting because I feel like I can kind of understand Walt's frustration, because I feel like almost without fail, any time that he would push the studio to do something that was artistically significant, it would not do well financially.
Right.
And every time he did something mainstream, it did well.
It was the big hit. Yeah.
And, you know, whether you're talking Alice in Wonderland, which was always so close to his heart, he loved Alice in Wonderland. It was one of the first properties he ever did. In the early shorts, and then it wasn't until the 1960s, late 1960s, that film kind of became popular and had a resurgence. It didn't do well when it was first released, but something more conventional like Cinderella does, you know, incredibly well.
Yeah.
And so it's really, I can kind of understand the frustration of this Xerox, in his eyes, lazy kind of film, that having that do so well would be frustrating from an artist's point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And he was definitely, one of the things I admire so much about Walt is that he wasn't content to just make the same movie over and over again, which would have been the smart business decision to make. He was always moving forward, And, you know, he it was just somebody so bold to make Pinocchio after Snow White, which couldn't be more different.
Yeah.
I think that that's really impressive. And then Fantasia couldn't be more different. And Bambi couldn't be more different. And it would have been so easy to just pump out a million movies just like Snow White. And he didn't do that. And I really admire him for that.
Yeah.
And so I don't know, it's I can see if you're looking at him as a businessman, it may be confusing, but if you're looking at him as an artist, who is, I think you can kind of understand why he felt the way he felt.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yeah. It's interesting. And that's interesting what you were talking about how from the animator's perspective, it allowed for their inking and their artistry to come through in a way that maybe wasn't possible when it went through inkers and then painters, and, you know, sort of went through. I mean, it just makes sense. Like, once the more hands that go through something, the more the quality is going to change.
Mm-hmm.
By necessity.
Yes.
So that's interesting. I hadn't heard that part of it. But yeah, I mean, this was an interesting film for them. But it starts out with basically the sort of love story, the first segment of the movie. You have Roger and Pongo as the confirmed bachelors.
They're the bachelors, yeah.
And Pongo is very bored with bachelor living. Roger's trying to be a songwriter. And so Pongo decides to become a matchmaker. He sees all these different couplings of dogs, which I love that whole scene. It's so funny.
Isn't that a fun scene?
Yeah. And then he sees Perdita, and he sees Anita. And he gets Roger out there, and they have this whole meet cute in the park, with them getting wet in the pond and everything. And I just love that whole sequence. It's so fun.
Oh, I do too. It's so charming. And it's just a perfect way to open this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I don't know if you agree, but I think that Roger and Anita are probably Disney's most underrated romance.
Oh, I agree. I think that's a really good point. Yeah. They're really a great romance.
Yeah.
For sure.
It's because they're not the main romance.
Right.
So you kind of forget about them a little bit. And they're not like a princess story or anything, yeah, kind of thing, but they're so fun, so cute, and and I like Pongo and Purdy too. They're so fun.
They're so cute how they're really kind of flirting with each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, all done. None of this is done with dialogue. Mm-hmm. And it's so super impressive, you know, with the animators getting that just a great physical comedy and just the great pantomime that they're doing with it. So impressive.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you have a really nice vocal cast here.
Yeah,
that I really enjoy. You have somebody named Ben Wright voicing Roger, and I really like the voice of Roger.
Oh, me too.
And then Lisa Davis as Anita, and then as Pongo and Purdy, you have Rod Taylor as Pongo, yeah, and Kate Bauer as Purdy. So. And of course you have the great Betty Lou Gearson as Cruella.
Oh my stars, who just steals the show. But you know, Rod Taylor is really good. I recently watched The Time Machine, you know, that he stars in, and it's like, oh yeah, there's Rod Taylor. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I think he was just kind of coming into his own because, you know, The Time Machine, if I'm not mistaken, was released in 1960. And then this was 101 Dalmatians was released in 1961. But anyway,
yeah,
I'm with you on the cast, and hello, as we all know, it's all about Cruella DeVille. I mean, really.
Yeah. Yeah. She is, And we'll talk a little bit more about it, but I think that not only is she great, but I think they use her very well in the movie.
Agreed.
And so I love the double wedding. It's so fun.
That so double cute. Wedding is about the cutest thing ever.
Yeah.
How Roger and Anita are getting married, and then just the way the camera backs out through the window, and there's Pongo and Perdita. I mean,
yeah, I love that. So and great. Yeah. One thing I think is weird, and I don't, maybe it's something in British that I don't understand. Why did they have a nanny for two grown adults? Like, why did they even need service for two humans? Like, they what? I don't
understand. Yeah. I wonder, yeah, that's a good point. Maybe it's a British thing. And then also, clearly, nanny plays a big part with the dogs, right? So,
yeah. But they were both caring for their dogs separately. Fine, just fine. I can only assume. I mean, and so it's so odd to me that they have this maid named Nanny for two grown people with no children.
Two grown adults, yeah, and just two dogs. Yeah.
Is that
weird? No, it's interesting. Weird. Yeah, and I just think it just, I wonder if it's British. I mean, yeah. I know it's different, like, with Mary Poppins, because there were children.
Yeah, they're children.
Children in
the
home.
Yeah. But maybe they just knew that Perdita was going to get pregnant right away.
That's right.
I mean, because it is kind of crazy that they would even think of keeping all 15 puppies. Could you have in a flat in London have 17 17 dogs?
You just can't even wrap your brain around it. I know.
It's so funny.
It's funny.
But anyway, we see Cruella, and she is just so great. I think so much of her personality comes out in her driving, which I think is brilliant.
Oh, I love her driving. I love her car.
Yeah.
You know, the design of her car. And then just she's so great. And, you know, I know that tobacco use is like the horrible thing, but isn't her cigarette amazing? Yeah. And the smoke that comes, you know, I mean, just the way that's animated,
because she's all bad, like there's no nuance to her, which is just fun. I like that. I'm tired of these surprise villains. It's just so refreshing to watch a movie like this. And I mean, her name is Cruella. Cruella DeVille, as devil in
DeVille,
her name.
As in, yeah, spell DEVIL, you know?
She lives in Hell Hall. I mean, come on. It's the best. I love it.
I do, too. It's so great. And, yeah, there is nothing to like about her.
Yeah.
And
so we get to the point of the night of the puppies, the birth of the puppies, and... and
I
this
love
is
that scene.
Yeah, they're 15 puppies,
and Pongo's reactions, you know, to it. Yeah. He's just this, you know,
14,
overwhelmed, but so deliriously happy. You know, it's so cute.
And little Rolly when they're moving in, trying to wake him up. So cute, and you see him
poke out. So. Yeah, they think they lost one of the puppies, but Roger's able to revive him, and it's really cute.
And then you have Cruella, and she's like, oh, that horrid white rat.
That's right.
No spots at all.
She's going to have to wait for the dogs to get spots.
And you have Roger standing up to Cruella. You're not one. You're not getting one.
Yeah,
it's really, really, really good. And you have her ink splaying all over the place, which makes them all look like Dalmatians.
Like they all look like Dalmatians. Yeah, it's really, yeah.
And then we get some really fun little moments of the puppies watch.
Oh my gosh,
the puppies watching
Rachel.
Television.
That's, as a kid, that was like one of my favorite sequences. Yeah. And it still is to this day. I mean, because... they're watching that Thunderbolt show, plus then the advertisements that they have and their little interactions and their little tails wagging. I mean, it is
so just cute. Adorable. Thunderbolt.
Yeah. It's adorable.
And there's only 5 puppies that are named, at least in what I could find. There's Lucky, Rolly, Patch, Penny, Freckles, that have dialogue.
Yeah, and all the rest of them. Yeah, I don't think they have, you're right. I don't think they have any dialogue. They just respond, right?
Yeah.
Emote.
Right.
Yeah.
There are names, I guess, but those are the 5 that have dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
We see an ad for Canine Crunchies.
Canine Crunchies. Love that.
And this is when we get introduced to horse Jasper. And I think what's so brilliant to me about this movie is that I think they use Cruella just enough. Right. One of my problems with The Rescuers is I just find Medusa so overwhelming. She is so shrill. She's so horrible, so mean. And there's just too much of her for me, for my taste. Mm-hmm. And I feel like because almost the entire time that the puppies are kidnapped, they're with Horace and Jasper.
Yeah.
You just get these little bits of Cruella coming in and out, in and out. I just think it makes it work so much better. And it keeps that character fun. So that is one like little thing you don't really think about when you're watching it, but I think is such an important decision that they made.
Yeah, no, I agree. Mm-hmm. That their use of Cruella de Vil was just spot on. No pun intended, but you're right. She's not always there. I mean, she's always a presence.
Yeah.
But she's not just in your face all the time. And when the times that she is there, you know, it's meaningful.
Yeah. Yeah. And so they pretend to be electric inspectors and they steal the puppies. And that whole scene is pretty, pretty dramatic.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, screaming out into the streets, it is one of the few films from Disney that has a urban aesthetic at all. That's set in a city. You hardly ever see that. So when it pans out after Nanny screaming, and you see all the flats and the rows of housing and everything, it's really quite. Quite beautiful, quite stirring, I guess.
Yeah, agreed, for sure.
And Horace and Jasper, and I love this whole scene that comes in next where Cruella is talking to them on the phone. I don't know, I just really like that scene.
Oh, I love that scene, because, I mean, the way that they designed it, too, again, talking about those color, you know, the use of just really simple but perfect colors.
Yeah.
Her phone is a devil. And her hair's in curlers, right? And
yes.
Which just really accentuates that really unusual face structure that they gave her.
Because, I mean, when you really think about it, her plan, like, it's completely insane. Like, what? She was really planning on these 2 humans that they were going to kill 99 puppies. And then skin them,
and then
I guess do with the rest of the corpses. What are they gonna? I mean, it's just the most morbid,
horrible thing. Horrible. Like,
what? Just for a coat? It's so insane. It's crazy.
It's crazy.
But it's so bad that it's fun.
You're right. Like,
that's
right.
That's what villains
that it works.
Used to be, and. So she calls Roger and Anita and I do like the point when Anita says something like, "Will you stop it, you idiot?" And Carl's like, "Anita." I like that. That was funny to me. And so this is when we get the Twilight bark.
Oh, and I love the Twilight bark.
I know. It's really fun. They go out.
And isn't it a clever use of, like, the animal world? mm-hmm. you know, in a story. I just think it's tremendously clever mm-hmm. and so well executed.
Yeah, and the first person, I mean, the first dog is the Great Dane, and then it goes from the Great Dane to the next, to the next, to the next, and then I find the final stop is the Colonel and the Captain and Sergeant Tibbs.
Sergeant Tibbs.
In the farm. And Sergeant Tibbs is one of my favorite side characters in all of Disney.
Sergeant Tibbs is brilliant.
Sergeant Tibbs.
Yeah, me too.
He's the real hero in all this.
Yeah, Sergeant Tibbs gets it done.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
But really, yeah, well done.
Uh-huh. Yes, he's very brave. He goes up to Hell Hall, and he sees them all watching television, they're with Horace and Jasper. And they are watching What's My Crime? And that is so fun. I love that little fake movie. I do too.
I love it.
And then we also see Pongo and Purdy. They run away and they get started on their journey to find the puppies.
Find Loki, yeah.
Yeah. And so... Then Sergeant Tibbs starts he starts trying to get all of the puppies out of the room, and they're talking, Horace and Jasper talking about their plan, how they're going to kill all the puppies. And they are like sociopaths too.
They're so crazy. They're so disturbed. But aren't they? I mean, but they're just these perfect villainous sidekicks too, because they're bumbling idiots, really.
but it
works. I mean, because it's not you hate them, but they're not like they're super scary either. Yeah. You know, they're just
This next segment, I think, is really brilliant, and we talked about it in the Aristocats. That the thing that movie doesn't do very well is there's really no sense of tension.
Right.
About whether they're going to make it to Paris. They kind of just get there.
Yeah.
And here, there's just tension along the way.
It is. It's really well stated, Rachel, because it's scary. You just think, oh my goodness, are they going to make it? And even though I've seen this movie a million times, every time I watch it, I'm always nervous.
Yeah. I mean, you see so Quella, well done. You see Cruella, and she's so close to him so many times. When Pongo sweeps the road, and she still sees their tracks.
Yeah.
And when they're walking down the ice river, and they're underneath the bridge, and the flashlight gets so close to, I think it's Rolly, I think. Mm-hmm. One of them, and then you also have a lot of tension with, you know, the puppies, and it's cold, and I think it's some, is it Lucky? My nose is froze, and my toes are froze.
And they're hungry, and they're tired, and you just feel for these little dogs, because it's almost like they're not being whiny. They're suffering, you know.
Yeah.
They're really suffering. And that whole segment where they're all shivering with their heads down, you know, as they're still trying to trudge forward in the snow.
It's really tense.
Oh, these poor little puppies.
Yeah. And then they get to the farm with the cows and the milk, and that's such a lovely scene.
Yeah.
It's such a nice a scene.
It's
a
really brilliantly a moment of rest, you know, that you get.
Yes.
Before the big final chase happens, but where they can get rest and get fortified and again it's super cute.
Mm-hmm. It's a nice break, and you have the three cows, the Queenie Leonard, Marjorie Bennett, as two of the voices for the cows, And they're very, they sound very iconic type Disney voices. Anyway, and then they get to the last spot with the Labrador. And I really like that voice as well. Ramsey Hill is his name. He does a really good job as the voice of that Labrador. And they get the idea to roll in the soot and to all get dirty.
Isn't that the most clever thing, too? I thought that was a really clever way. Yeah.
Yeah, I really, and the one little girl puppy, and she's like, "You mean you want us to get dirty?"
It's so cute.
Yes, and so this scene I think is one of my favorites in the whole film, because it's just so tense. Them getting those puppies onto the truck and onto the van, and you see Cruella kind of side eyeing them and looking, and then once it gets to that last group and you see the spots from the icicles, plop 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 plop, it's really good.
Yeah.
And so I mean, especially like, so if you compare it to the scene of the Cats and Aristocats getting on the moving van,
I was thinking the exact same thing. There's just no comparison. Yeah, there's no tension at all. And then, you know, Marie keeps like falling out of stuff or whatever, and it's like, ugh. Yeah. Whereas they didn't really have, I mean, they had some action with the puppies, you know, or Pongo's like, you know, snap one is starting to fall out or whatever, but it's not nearly as annoying as it is. And I just it's exciting. It's all exciting. Yeah.
And you have Cruella saying, "It can't be. It's impossible. It's so good." And then I do love the van driver when he's like, "Crazy woman drivers."
Right, because he's just like this random guy. It's a moving van or something, isn't it? Yeah.
And so, yeah,
Cruella's trying to run him off the road.
Right, and she ends up crashing, and then Horace and Jasper end up crashing into her, and she gets very, very upset. And then we get our reunion where the puppies are there, and
it's Christmas time.
Yes,
and Roger's got a hit song.
Yeah,
I mean, Cruella de Vil.
Yeah, he turned that around into a hit pretty quick.
Yeah, quickly, and got him a lot of money. It sounds like.
And so they're gonna go out to the country. They're gonna run a Dalmatian plantation.
Dalmatian plantation,
and he has a whole new hit song. The Dalmatian plantation.
And isn't that scene just the cutest? They're all just kind of covered in soot or partially covered, and
I mean, in real life, a Dalmatian plantation would be like my nightmare because I am not a huge animal person. As far as like, I need my space, my private space, and Dalmatians are very jumpy dogs. They're not like real sedate dogs,
right?
That's why they use them in fire, you know, like fire stations and things like that.
They require a lot of activity, right? And a lot of
But there we go. So that's the end, and it's just such a delightful film. It's got such a great villain. It has its own unique artistic style. It is funny. It's tense. It's just great. I love it. And I mean, I would give it top scores. Like I said, it's one of my favorite Disney animated films.
Yeah, mine too. And
so we had a lot of comments on the Twitter.
Oh, cool. Yay.
And I did actually also post on Facebook this last time to try to get some different people. So I have quite a few comments. So Kyle, he says, best of the 60s Disney animated feature trio. Wonderful, thoroughly modern art direction, and ace animation, a well-structured mystery adventure. Richard Southworth, he says, I find it one of the more ordinary Disney films, though it certainly has some fun moments. The Cruella de Vil song is my favorite thing about it. Jonathan J. North, he says, I literally just watched this last week. I think it's a really charming and fun little film. I even love the imperfect animation and stylization that resulted from a need to save money. I think it makes it for a great look, and I kind of wish they'd do more movies that way today. Matthew Latham, he says, he has a long one, but it's really good. He says, a fun romp. I love that Walt tried something different. Disney tried to bill it as the most baffling mystery of the century, but since we know who did it, it actually becomes somewhat of a suspenseful thriller. Yes, I use this term lightly. Cruella de Vil is in the pantheon of the best Disney villains, and that song is amazing. Plus, I love the little shout-outs to the 1960s, such as The Clothes, The Lone Ranger ripoff, and the Canine Crunchies commercial. Animated Antic, he says, I adore it. One of my favorite animated Disney films. I love how good the story is. The animation is phenomenal. Easily my favorite use of the Xerox animation, and the characters are all good. Also, Cruella, enough said. And so then, okay, over on Facebook, Meredith Tolley, she says, one of my all-time favorites, love the music, subtle, but so much talent. And Alex Klepp says, I love it. I love the connection between the human and dog couples. The animation is excellent. The other characters are great. Cruella de Vil, the villain, and the song are great, as well as Jasper and Horace being sneaky sidekicks. And one last one, Matthew David Klein, who's a great supporter of the podcast. So thank you so much, Matthew. He says, when I was a kid, I always thought of 101 Dalmatians as just a fun dog or just a fun animal movie like Lady and the Tramp, The Aristocats, or even Oliver and Company, or movies like those. However, after rewatching this film as an adult, along with all the other Disney classics just a few years ago, I was very surprised by how much richness and heart there was in the story. All the characters, from the main ones like Pongo, Perdita, and Roger and Anita, to the villains like Cruella de Vil and her sidekicks Horace and Jasper, how could you not like all of these characters? In all honesty, I would say that between this film, The Sword and the Stone, and The Jungle Book, all of which were released in the 1960s, 101 Dalmatians most definitely was the best of the three. I also enjoyed the live-action adaptation that was released back in 1996. So there we go. Pretty well loved.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice
for
to hear.
For the most part. For the most part.
Yeah. What so, your followers have to say. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
There we go. All right. Well, let's see what the random number Jerry has for us. Okay. So we got Rescuers Down Under. Should we just do both?
Well, you know, I'm all for that, but I know those aren't your favorite. But I guess we can get them over with, right?
I mean, I especially dislike the first one.
And I adore it. So I'll be, yeah. This is going to be fun to talk with you about it.
I feel like it's weird to do Rescuers Down Under before we do the
the
first one.
I agree. So hack it in and do an awesome Rescuers double feature.
All right. I think that'll be fun. So let's do a double feature. Next month, we're going to do The Rescuers and The Rescuers Down Under. And we'll just, the Children's Aid Society.
We'll Rescue Aid Society, Rescue yeah.
We will be their biggest fans next month. So that'll be a lot of fun. And so, look forward to that, you guys. Let us know what you think of all the different things that we talked about with 101 Dalmatians. Where does it rank for you? We'd love to hear. Check us out on Twitter at Disney Talking. We'd love to hear your thoughts. And Stanford, where can people find you?
I am on Twitter at Stanford Clark, and I have a movie podcast and blog at moviespastandpresent.com.
Great. And you can find me at Rachel's Reviews, all of our social media, iTunes, YouTube, and on Rotten Tomatoes, so make sure to check that out. And then also, you can follow me at the Hallmarkies Podcast, and we're doing lots of fun content on there. So thanks so much. This was really fun. And,
this is way fun. Thank you.
And we'll talk to you all later. Bye, everyone.
Bye.